Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Kate Mollison. Kate Mollison is a certified grief coach who uses a unique approach to promote awareness around the importance of grief. Using her own experiences as a widow, Kate adds a personal touch to an otherwise isolating and difficult topic. She is the founder and operator of On Tuesdays We Wear Black, a consulting company, working as a grief and bereavement specialist where she focuses on helping others understand the connection between grief and bereavement. Kate has several years' experience as a clinical case manager, and as a certified playmaker, she uses a modality that helps people unlock joy and find peace and meaning again after loss. By educating both individuals and businesses about the importance of grief integration, she provides education that fosters visibility and support. Kate is also actively working for legislative change surrounding bereavement leave laws, and is the host of the National Grief Awareness Professional Development Conference. And for more information about Kate and her work, you can visit her website at www.otwwb.com. And with that, Kate, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for a while now.
Thanks so much, Dave, for having me and that beautiful introduction.
Well, you're welcome. And I have to share a little bit about how we met because it was an organic process that got us together. Kate came up as a suggested friend on my Facebook friends list. And I looked at her profile. I looked at also our mutual friends. And I said, let me send her a friend request. But in addition to that, I also sent you a message on Facebook letting you know who I was and who our mutual friends were. And to my gratification, she accepted my request. And I think you told me later, you don't usually do that with people you don't know.
Yeah. So one, I have a personal Facebook page and a business Facebook page. And you did this on my personal Facebook page. And two, I don't usually add people. I don't usually respond to messages from people that I don't know or not met. And I certainly don't add people on Facebook that I've never met. So it was, but it's similar to how I met my late husband. It was just that universal resonation where it was like, oh, nope, I need to be connected to the person. And it's outside all of my normal boundaries and safeguards and parameters. Something about it said, do it. I'm now connected with you.
And I'm grateful for the connection as well. We're both going to be involved in, I know, a very project that you're very passionate about, which is the National Grief Awareness Professional Development Conference. We're going to be talking about that later in the podcast anyway, but my first question for you is to please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Oh, there's a few, but the one that sticks out the most is my journey into widowhood. That really helped me find the passion that is the work that I do. It is the impetus of why I do everything that I do. And I think without having gone through that grief experience, bereavement experience, and that trauma and several traumas, I wouldn't have the wit or the wherewithal to navigate my own experience, but also to help other people navigate their experiences. Widowhood is a wild journey, and I'm grateful for the lessons, but I also appreciate the fact that I'm able to alchemize it and use it to help other people.
And I think that's typically what happens. I think we have a couple of different choices when tragedy befalls us, one, we can really, after we go through the initial phase of grief, we can choose to stay stuck. And many people would disagree with me with that, but we can make a choice to stay stuck after we get through the initial muck of grief, or we can choose to go through the muck of grief, wallow through it, and try to reemerge with finding a life that is meaningful and purposeful. And I'm glad to see that you are embarking on that path.
It really is a choice. And I love that you say that. A lot of the teachings that I do for individuals and a lot of the empowerment coaching that I do is about that alchemization of your experience. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, right? It's that conscious decision to say, I'm going to change this because I don't like how it feels or what it's doing. And then making that conscious, consorted, active effort. Yeah. Grief is muscle, and it ends by being used. And how we use it is going through it. You have to go through it. The only way out is through.
Yeah, there's no other way to integrate our grief other than to move forward and go through it, and to go through some days and moments that are not going to be so pretty. But we have to get through. We have to get through the non-prettiness of grief in order to emerge with a new perspective and new purpose and a new focus. Speaking of widowhood, I know your transitioned husband's name is Craig. And yeah. I always like to ask my guest contributors to tell us a little bit about the person that you've lost, the person that has transitioned, so that we can get to know your transitioned loved one through your eyes. So with that, if you would share with our audience a bit about what made Craig, what makes him special.
Gladly. I always say that it is my honor and my pleasure that my job is to talk about my husband, right? What a better job to have, and what a better way to pay homage and honor to the marriage that we had before he passed is to turn this endeavor into something tangible. And Craig, who's already with us, as we've seen by a few technical glitches before we got started, right? Craig was, he is ineffable. He is undescribable, so complex and wonderful in the fact that he was very analytical in his thinking, an Excel guy, a staff guy, a number guy, huge nerd, played D&D, was a big, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, Dungeons Master, was well-read. We had a huge personal library, like a literal room that was just floor-to-ceiling books. Very well read, very well spoken. He was for the gifted and talented program when he was a kid, and then worked for the state of Connecticut right before he passed. It was the Secretary of State's office, and he was compliance and voter registration information and all of that like techie stuff. He was a data analyst. So any of those editable PDF forms on the state website, that's his fault. He basically created those. He started in the mail room in the early 90s and worked his way up to a project manager for the Secretary of State, which was really cool. I remember towards the end there was one point right during COVID, maybe he came home from work and he wasn't very emotive, pretty middle of the road kind of guy, took a lot to swing the pendulum. And then the side that people really didn't get to see, that I was privy to, was the humor. And his just attention to detail. I think that analytical mindedness really paid off in the emotional department, because when he felt safe and when it was at home and private, he was to it. The details were everything. I remember being pregnant and craving Dole Whip in the middle of February. And for anybody out there who knows what Dole Whip is, it is pineapple soft serve and only can really be found in either Orlando or Hawaii. It was February. And I was like, I need Dole Whip. And he went out and he was gone for 4 hours. And then he came home and he came home with Dole Whip. And it was just that like thoroughness and attention to detail and always having my fix, always having my back. Very romantic, very sweet, great sense of humor. And my business name actually is inspired by him and who he was and how he was. He was a huge Broadway musical fan. It was one of the things that we did regularly. It's how he proposed to me, what we did for his milestone birthdays. We would go to the city regularly. And his favorite one happened to be Mean Girls, the Broadway production of Mean Girls. Like, it's not lost on me that made its theatrical debut this year. So much so that he would go to work and he would sit in the lunchroom at the Secretary of State's office and people would sit down next to him and he would whisper to them those Mean Girls quotes, right? He loved it so much. He would wear a pink tie or a pink shirt to work on Wednesdays. He'd walk around the office going, on Wednesdays we wear pink. And so it was just, I don't know why that one, but he had the whole soundtrack on his iPod and we would jam out in the car to it. That one and the Legally Blonde Broadway adaptation was another favorite of his. And Book of Mormon, that was probably his favorite. But the Mean Girls one, he passed away on a Tuesday. So while on Wednesday we wear pink, on Tuesdays we wear black.
And if I'm recalling correctly, he passed away the day before his birthday. Am I correct?
You are correct, yeah. I always say that he didn't want me to remember his birthday as the day he died, so he did that on purpose. I don't know if that's just something I tell myself to bring myself comfort, but yeah, he passed away on November 24th of 2020.
What has changed for you since his passing? And I ask this question, Kate, because I know when my daughter Janine transitioned over 21 years ago, my beliefs about the world, my beliefs about what I thought was fair, was right, was just, all of that was out on the table. And for somebody who, for somebody who was widowed at a very young age, I would think that would have had the same ramifications in terms of you putting everything out on the table that you believed in at one time and saying, okay, how do I move forward? What changes, what stays, what gets modified, what gets expanded? So if you could tell our audience a little bit about that, how that process has been for you, the challenges with it, anywhere you want to go with it.
Yeah, I love that question because I think that it's important to note, regardless of the person who transitions and what that relationship is, it's important to note that there will be erosion of some of what your life is. There will be an evolution of some of what your life is. There will be a removal of some of what your life is. I can't give a blanket, everything has changed, but it also, it has. And my spirituality has blossomed, evolved. I grew up very religious, like strict religious. And then in my young adult life was absent of any structured religion or spirituality. I had been through previous traumas in my life. And I had said, there is no such thing of a God if they let these things happen to an innocent child and I'm a teenager and all of these things. And so I just lived my life in absence of religion. It was the other swing of the pendulum. And that was fine. Craig was brought up strict Baptist. I was up strict. Like, we both went, well, we had enough of that. So organized religion based on Christianity, if you will. The judgment, honestly. You do use that as a word for you, but for me, it just felt more like calisthenics than any type of emotional support. After he passed, there was this huge upheaval of spiritual connectedness. And I've always found the spiritual realm intriguing, the paranormal intriguing. I'm a witchy woman, if you will, by nature. I just like spooky things and Halloween things and the mystic and the mysterious. But that always felt more just like fun and lighthearted and just a hobby. But after his passing, it took a turn where it was more, there was a connectedness and a plug in, if you will, in a way that I hadn't felt anywhere before. So I went and I had a tarot reading and I met with a medium and then I started staging the house and I started looking into all of that spirituality and navigating that and finding things that I resonated with and realizing that I wield power to connect with him and to talk with him and conversate with him. And maybe not the way that you and I are conversating, but that spiritual plug in was like a corded phone and he was holding one end and I was holding the other, or am holding, I should say, because he was talking yesterday. Typically he talks to me in song, like randomly a song that shouldn't be playing or whatever will come on and I'll be like, all right, yeah, I hear you. But that awareness of that thinning of the veil and that spiritual presence beyond, oh, they're in a better place, if you will. It was this very connected feeling to someone on the other side of that space. I don't have a better word for that. Veil, curtain, wall, whatever. I do. I feel very connected to him in a way that probably would have freaked me out previously. What else has changed? Everything. My physical appearance. I was so stressed and so grief-ridden and just not taking care of myself. I was using poor coping strategies and maladaptive mechanisms. And as a result, I was losing hair. I was pulling it out to the point where I had to go to my hairdresser and say, do something. I used to have long hair and now I have a secret. The long hair didn't suit me anymore. And what started as a practical workaround for symptomatic experience of grief turned into a new identity. I realized, wow, I hated having long hair. I will never go back. It's so freeing. But there's also nowhere to hide. Women have a tendency to hide behind their hair. And when you remove the hair, you're very vulnerable and you're very exposed. And I wasn't prepared for that part, as necessary as it was. Some of the evolution that I experienced forced on me and just happened as you stumble down the road. Grief is like having a hangover, right? Like you walk down that road and you're stumbling and your body aches and your head hurts and you're dizzy and foggy and you're not sure where you're going and you're like, where the hell did that tattoo come from? And oh God, somebody's phone number's on my hand. And it's that very wild of what the hell just happened experience when you come out on the other side of it. And to look back at the path that you walked and try to examine it is a very wild experience too. Cut all my hair off. I pierced my nose. I rode a motorcycle. I shot a gun. I got a whole bunch of tattoos. I had some before, but now we're like way up there in numbers. And I had to buy a house, had to navigate buying my own property and being financially independent. And that also was a gift in its own way, where Craig gave me that skill set. He was managing the finances for us for the most part, and we had our roles and our marriage, and we were navigating things. And then after he passed, I had to do all of it. And there was a necessity in learning those skills, and I have a deep appreciation for having the skill set now. But to answer your question, what's changed? What hasn't changed? Because even on a cellular level, my body is different. My DNA is different. My parenting style is different. What I eat, the way I eat, the way I sleep, what side of the bed I sleep on, how I dress, how I talk, what boundaries I hold for myself, all of those things are completely different than they were.
That's an interesting transformative process. We think of the big things in terms of our beliefs, how we view the world, but it's also the little things that we lose track of in terms of how we sleep, how we eat. It's just those little things that have also transformed us. And also, I think being thrust into the role of a single parent had to be at times very daunting for you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Solo parenting is no joke, because single parents generally have the capacity to have an extra set of hands, right? And if the biological co-parent isn't around, they at least have legal recourse in which they can pursue support. With a solo parenting, there is no one. 6 p.m., you're out of milk in the middle of making dinner. There's no one to run to the grocery store. Or you need a shower, or you're not sleeping, or one of the kids is sick and has to stay home from school or picked up early from school. It's you. It's all you, all the time, 24/7. Even when they're somewhere else, my kids go and stay overnight with my parents from time to time, and it's still me making doctor's appointments and organizing the calendar and packing school lunches and buying the grocery, doing the laundry and making the beds. And obviously my kids help out. My son is older. He's a teenager. My daughter is school aged, so they're capable. But there's only so much they can do. And to a degree, it's not fair to them to inflict that trauma on them to increase their workload as a byproduct of the situation. They're kids and they deserve to be kids. I'm the adult. It's my job to ensure they're cared for. And part of that is protecting their childhood.
Yeah. And the other thing too, and I've heard this from other individuals too, with children, grief tends to recapitulate throughout their adolescent life cycle. So as they engage or they progress to specific developmental stages, their meaning of death and loss are going to evolve, and they're going to re-experience in grief at that appropriate developmental stage. So for parents, that's also something that, and I'm sure you're very aware of that, but it's something that is another challenge, particularly as a single parent.
It's a trigger too, right? Like it, we parents don't want to watch our children hurt. And we try very hard to either remove it or help them work through it or protect them from it. And this is one I can do none of those things for, right? Like they have to go through the journey in their own way, on their own time, and repeatedly. The science says that the frontal cortex of the brain is not fully developed to process grief until about age 21. So my son was 11 when his dad died. And yes, he saw it. And yes, he was in it. And he watched me very raw. I was very raw in my grief in front of him. And I was very angry with myself for a while because I was, oh my God, I inflicted this trauma on my child. He watched me writhe on the floor. And I finally, after multitude of research and talking to many experts, it was, he did not have the capacity to experience that moment or those scenes the way I did. And so any of those emotions I'm having about his experience is a projection of my own grief onto him. And I need to step back and just support his process and hold space for it. And if that means he's apathetic, then that means he's apathetic. Or if that means he's emotional, then he's emotional. If that means he's angry, processing it through that emotion, that's okay too. I do remind him that just because you are upset does not mean you get to be mean. Mm-hmm. Being a teenage boy is hard enough. And then you layer grief and the loss of a father figure and me dating and starting that whole experience. It's a lot, but you're right. He'll reprocess it. We've started having that. And then my five-year-old, she was 19 months when her dad died. She knew nothing. And now to have her getting ready to go into kindergarten and she's starting to process it, where we're having her crying or nightmares or just random moments of feeling very sad and malaise, not being able to understand why or articulate why, and me not wanting to fill her with, oh, that's grief, because I don't want to identify those feelings for her, but helping her find the language for what it might be. And that's hard to keep my own peace in check and be mindful of and keep my own emotions. And then, yes, we all cry together sometime, but there's also moments after everybody goes to bed where I'm like, holy crap, today was really hard. I can't do anything about how much it hurts. And I know how much it hurt because we both lost that same person. So there's a community and a camaraderie, but also like a sadness and a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a cacophony of complex emotions that can be really challenging to navigate, and we have to navigate them alone. So to anyone out there listening in the widowhood experience, find yourself a really good support system, which is way easier said than done.
It is, and I think the key to any of us working through grief or any other life-altering challenges is to find a community of support that gets us and that will also support our continued connections to our loved ones as well, too, and not look at that as pathological or as abnormal grieving. You had mentioned earlier, you're still very strongly connected to Craig. I'm strongly connected to my daughter and to my ancestors before her. They are a part of my lives. The relationship with them has not died just because their physical presence is no longer. Your Craig is going to be your husband, regardless of where he's residing at this point in the universe.
And he's my soulmate. Yeah, he really is. There is no reason that we should have intersected. He was 20 years my senior. He lived an hour away in a different state. He was previously married, divorced, had four teenage kids, had a really great job. I was a single mom on welfare living with my parents. And basically had just finished college and was working an entry-level career-based job, but didn't have anything really. And he reached down and plucked me out of poverty and loved me despite my traumas and my trauma reactions and my baggage and my complexities. He just loved me through it and taught me how to love myself and taught me what real love is. And he continues to show me that. It's a very bizarre connection. Once you understand it and then allow it, because I understood. I was like, okay, he's around. And that freaked me out. You know, when you see that full body apparition and everyone tells you, oh, it's the grief. It was really early. You're hallucinating. I'm like, oh, nope. It changes how you understand where that person is in connection to you on a spiritual level. So it is that transformation of relationship, very much.
Yeah, we can't talk about transcending trauma without talking about any changes in our own spirituality or self-awareness that occurs as a result of that. But the fact that you opened yourself up to the fact that relationships can occur in a multidimensional universe or any place in that universe, once you opened yourself up to that, Craig has continued to make himself present, and he's going to continue to make himself present and, you know, guide you through whatever challenges or whatever through continued phases of your journey that you go through.
He very much does. It's so funny. I remember very early on after he had passed, and it was just this bizarre feeling of someone always over my shoulder, and I thought I was paranoid, or it was just grief, or the sleep deprivation, or the lack of food, or anything to my brain, the excess of wine that I was being fed at that point. It all felt very, I don't know, surreal, and almost like that hair on the back of your neck when you watch a horror movie kind of feeling. And then I had a dream, a very vivid dream, and it was, we were in this beautiful park, and there were like people everywhere. And I realized, I don't want to call it heaven, but I realized it was where he was. And it was people running into each other's arms and embracing. And then it's just him and I sitting at this picnic table. And he took my hands and he told me he loved me. And he told me that I was safe and that I was strong and that I was going to be okay. You know, he always used to say to me, "You are the strongest person I have ever met." And I always scoffed at that. And in this dream, he said it the exact same way. And then he got up from the table and he started to walk away. And I said, "Where are you going?" And he said, "Don't worry, we'll see each other." And then he walked away. And it was, sorry, it was just, that was the moment where my shift in understanding happened, where that connectedness to spirituality happened. Because that dream, that moment felt so real. It was real. Like I firmly believe I was there with him. It changes how you move forward. Widowhood makes you really good at crying in public. Mm-hmm. As long as no one tells me I cried pretty, because that's what I got told at the funeral. Pro tip number one, don't say that.
I got to admit, I've heard some of the weirdest things that have been said to people during their times of sorrow. I have never heard crying pretty before, so that's a first for me.
Yeah, a couple different people are like, "But at least you cry pretty."
I facilitate a monthly support group at a local retreat center. I tell them, look, crying is fine. You don't have to apologize for it. We have tissues and the flood insurance is paid. So don't just let it go.
Like that.
Just let it go. And just don't, you don't need to apologize for your tears. What you've been through is traumatic, and you have every right to show your emotions in any way that you see fit.
I think it's important to note that, like, even though I am a grief coach and I am a professional and I do this work, I'm still in it. And that's what really qualified me to help other people. Like, I could have all the credentialing in the world. I could have all the degrees and certifications, and I've read every single book on losing a spouse. But the best way I'm going to help someone else is because and by going through it. So it is the gift of perspective. Yet another thing that Craig continues to give me is the gift of perspective. If I'm going to live up to that wonderful but stressful term of endearment of being the strongest person that he had ever met, then I have to continue to just breathe through it and feel it and experience it. Sometimes it means crying in inopportune places, but I wear my tears proudly because they're just a continued representation of the love that I have for Craig. Grief is just the leftover love we didn't have to give people while they were still alive. And it is a transformation of our commitment to one another.
And to be able to cry when we feel we need to cry, or when it's called for, or even when it's not called for, is a is an extension of the emotional authenticity that we learn to develop in our grief journeys.
Yeah.
I will sit with somebody who's telling me their day sucks because it isn't about, I'm happy all the time, because nobody's happy all the time, even though a lot of people like to give that impression. If you tell me your day sucks, we'll sit down and talk because I know you're coming from an authentic place and I can go there with you. And I also tell individuals, don't ask somebody who's grieving how they're doing unless you have time for an answer, because you don't know what you're going to get at that point.
And
don't ask the question if you don't have time to hold space for the answer.
You have to be able to provide that aftercare, that consistent gained space that you're holding for someone, because that drop, that moment, that floor could doubt at any point. So if you're going to be that support person for someone, just know that it's an on-call position. You have to just be available to hold space in a way that may be uncomfortable for you. And like you said, it's not about you. It's about whoever's grieving, and you're holding that space for them. So get comfortable being uncomfortable and get comfortable just holding space and not saying anything, right? That's the best thing I can say to people. If you don't know what to say, don't say anything. Just hold space.
The power of presence can be more impactful than the power of words itself.
Absolutely.
The other thing you mentioned, and I like that you said this, that sometimes as a grief coach, and I'm paraphrasing this, that we will also show tears. We will also show emotion to a person's story because we've been there. We've been through our worst traumas. And we can meet anybody at the place of their worst trauma because we know what our worst trauma was. And I tell my students that it is okay to demonstrate that kind of emotion to a person's very heartfelt story, because what that's going to do is create a bond, going to create a relationship.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about probably the greatest form of advanced empathy is to show emotions and to shed a tear. I think that's a very powerful moment that transcends therapeutic technique, that transcends coaching techniques.
It's just the human experience.
Exactly. Just showing that we are human.
Just create their misery loved company for a reason.
But to meet somebody there at that level of emotion, I think is very powerful. That is powerful whether we're a bereavement support specialist, whether we're a coach, or whether we're just a friend trying to offer support.
Yeah.
I think that's powerful.
I agree.
Now, just shifting gears a little bit. On Tuesdays, we wear black. You already talked about how you came up with the name for your organization. Tell our audience about the mission of your organization and what services that you provide to individuals who request it.
Yeah. So on Tuesdays, we wear black is a consulting firm. So I am not a therapist, but I can find you a good one. I am a community educator. So I do free programming where I help people understand death in general, grief, bereavement. So I host something called a Death Cafe, which is from a global nonprofit of the same name. And that is about creating community education around what happens when we die, or what do we need to do before we die? All of those various facets and components that we don't really talk about. Another initiative in my business besides the free community education that I do is business consulting. So I'll go into an organization and work either directly with management or with HR or with a consulting company that they're already partnered with. And I'll look at what bereavement policies and packages they have in place for benefits for employees and for customers, help them evaluate that and have more grief inclusive services, mental health inclusive services, and be able to not increase their cost or risk their profit and productivity. It's about making a better company culture and being more human in our professional lives. And then the last facet of what I do, obviously, is individual services. So for the people who are going through it and need help, either pre-loss in the planning stages or in post-loss in the immediate turmoil and aftermath, I help people. We manage the grief symptoms and we access that holistic health. How are you eating? How are you sleeping? Do you have a primary? Are you using recreational drugs? Do you need a therapist? All of those things. But then we also do the do you need an estate lawyer? Let's open a probate. Let's advocate for an autopsy. Let's plan the funeral, all of those things. So I'm like a project manager, but for death. On Tuesdays We Wear Black is a one-stop comprehensive funeral, death, grief, bereavement, learning, and consultation service. I hope that answers that question.
I think it does, and the services you do provide are very comprehensive. I imagine you have a lot of stakeholders, a lot of partners that will collaborate with you, whom you can refer to for specific services.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not a therapist, but I work with preferred therapists. I don't do single referrals, so I have a network in each industry. So I have a network of real estate agents, a network of credit repair people, a network of movers, a network of assisted living facility program directors. So all of those different arenas that you need, I coordinate them and I map make people to their best fit. And based on what their specific needs are, it is very a la carte, if you will. Each situation is unique and individual. And while there's blanket needs that everybody has, things that we all are unilaterally going to have to do, i.e. plan a funeral or choose what happens to physical form of our loved one, the form of disposition, if you will, for those in the technical field, you have to do those things. So how do you navigate those choices when you're deep in grief? And that also comes from personal experience. I was 3 weeks into being out of work because I used my bereavement leave, and then I used my PTO, and Craig died very unexpectedly, and it was cheap COVID time. He died not related to COVID. I just like to clarify that. But we were navigating, my name wasn't on the house. So it was like navigating staying in the house and paying the rent and COVID and his medical stuff that he had going on. All of these different parts, I was project managing. I amassed this huge knowledge of the how-tos and the what-tos. So I used that as my scaffolding for how to help other people. And I help people create their own roadmap and then access the services that they need.
Yeah, it sounds like you are a very comprehensive project manager. You look at also the holistic mind, body, spirit piece, but also the practical considerations and matters that we have to address pre and post death. So I think it's great with the services you provide and the fact that you have a community of providers that you can go to and refer individuals to, that models the community support that is so necessary for helping individuals get through all aspects of the grief journey.
They say it takes a village to raise a child. They don't realize that it takes a community to support someone in grief. So I tried to create that community and create that landing page where when you get to my website, one of the first things it says is, if you found me, then you've done step number one. You've found a resource who's going to help you navigate the rest. You've found that captain, and I'm going to help navigate through the dark night and use the stars to find our way wherever your destination happens to be. Because I can't tell people how to grieve. I can tell them what worked for me. I can't even tell people how to bereave. I can tell you, here's the things you legally are obligated to do, but whether or not you do them, that's on you. So I am simply the messenger. I help people navigate Social Security benefits. I help employers navigate the ADA protection rights of grief, because grief is inclusive of a federal legislation from 2015, makes grief ADA protected. So it's not grief inclusive in your benefits for bereavement, typically you're federally non-compliant. Business owners hear that and they like freak out. Okay, don't panic. How do we fix this? Oh, I don't have the money to blah, blah, blah. Let's look at your expenses. Let's look at your current package offering. Let's partner with community resources that may be willing to provide free or reduced cost services. Let's create a community, which is really the impetus of the conference, which I know you said we'll be talking about. Just plug it now. But the impetus of that conference is that training and resource building for all of those business owners.
Let's get into the conference right now, because that was going to be my next question anyway. So
look at that.
And we're in sync. August 31st of this year, we got the National Grief Awareness Professional Development Conference taking place in Hartford, Connecticut. Tell us more about the conference, what you hope the participants take away from the conference, and maybe about some of the national grief presenters you've lined up as well.
Yeah.
And so let's just Go for it.
Let's dive right in, right? The National Grief Awareness Professional Development Conference is in conjunction with National Grief Awareness Day. It is a nationally recognized holiday that falls on August 30th. But the conference, like you said, is happening August 31st, open to industry professionals from any discipline, really, anybody who touches that sphere of grief and bereavement. So therapists, teachers, real estate agents, financial planners, mortgage officers, credit repair people, but even tradesmen, electricians, moving companies, plumbers, contractors, social workers, you name it, you touch the sphere of grief. So this conference has got 9 in total presenters, Dave being one of them. Thank you, Dave. I'm so excited to have you presenting. But it is to really help teach businesses an understanding of what's needed for grief support, both like when the loss happens for an employee or when an employee passes, or how to talk to their customers or their client base about it. We're not taught how grief can manifest in the physical body, and we're not taught how grief can affect our work, our productivity, and our self-efficacy, our own belief in our ability to do our job. And that then has risk of imposter syndrome and all these other facets. And for those of us who do grief work, we know that it's not linear. So those secondary losses and those unseen triggers and those moments that grief blindsides you, and then you're not productive and people go, what the hell's wrong with you? You're expected to check your personal life at the door. And that's just not realistic or sustainable anymore. It may be the way that businesses have been doing things, but in a post-COVID world, grief has got to be included because grief is everywhere. It's not just death, right? It is divorce. It is the job you didn't get. It is the pet you had to either rehome or put down. It's your parents selling your childhood home. It's a hole in your favorite sweater. If that is your only experience with loss, it is still a loss. It is still applicable. But how do we move through those emotions, remove our own personal filters and biases, create inclusive safe space for grief, understand how it shows up, how it can affect our work, and then put safeguards in place to help people move through that so we can all be productive and healthy and well and healed and create, again, that sense of community. So the Mark Twain House and Museum, it has graciously offered to host the event. I'm so honored to have such an incredible historical venue for this beautiful conference that's going to happen. It's a lovely outdoor space. They'll be able to take advantage of their gardens and their grounds and all that. We're going to have a boxed lunch. I've got a really cool craft mocktail cart. So they're going to have a curated non-alcoholic fun beverage for us there. We'll have a professional photographer on site who will be taking photos and optional headshots for people if they want to. We've got some really great swag, a couple of good raffles and giveaway. And that's all great, but really what people should be coming for is the content, right? We're going to be talking about grief in the workplace and how do we take our own grief and then process it to create that more authentic understanding. Be practicing those interpersonal conversations and working with a certified support coach, someone who works very specifically to create person-to-person conversations. We're going to model those. We're going to look at our own grief and how that affects our perceptions, our filters, and our actions. Look at how grief affects profitability, productivity, and how it actually saves businesses money is to invest in grief support. And then Dave, you're going to be presenting on that continued relationship and how we take those people we've lost and move forward with the best parts of them. And then I will also be presenting for one of the workshops where I will be doing a playmaker session. So it's dope. You get to come and play. Who doesn't want to play and unlock joy and remember what joy feels like after having dug deep into grief and sadness to bring it home and end the day with a little bit of play and happiness and laughter, I think is important to send people back out into the world, you know, that bow tied back up. But it's going to be a really great event. We are selling tickets fast. So I would recommend anybody who's interested, hop onto the Eventbrite and get your tickets now. We are on our way to being halfway sold out. So I would love to be completely sold out. And there's still sponsorship opportunities. So anybody out there listening and says, maybe I can't make it, but I want to participate. Sponsorship is always a great way to spread the message, to share the word, right? And it doesn't have to always be monetary sponsorship. There's conversation to be had and ways to help if you're eager to get involved.
And definitely we'll have the link to registration on the website and sponsorship and anything else that's related. So I'll make sure that's in the program notes and episode notes. So thanks for that. I'm excited. I was really thrilled to be invited to present. And I know we have a great lineup of presenters, and it's just really great for me to be a part of that and to network with other professionals as well, too, because I always learn something from everybody. And that's been my learning process is going to continue to go until I go. So thanks for that, Kate. And I'll be seeing you in person in August. And of course, we'll be doing the Zoom meetings leading up to that. It'll be great to connect with you and everybody in that forum as well, too. So
I'm so excited to have you come present. I think that what you're talking about is really going to resonate with a lot of the local business owners, but I would love to have people from your area come and experience this conference, because we have an Emmy award-winning docu-series director who focuses on grief and bereavement. I have the president of the Global Grief Network coming, and he's endorsed the conference and is participating as our keynote speaker. Working very hard on a prize potential celebrity appearance. And that's all I can say about that. But there's really exciting stuff happening. So I'm urging people to come to this conference. The hope is that will be an annual event, a reoccurring event. The only way that is possible is if people come to the first one. So get out there, get your tickets, and come support a great educational experience.
Thank you, Kate. If you are going to leave our listeners with just one thing today, what would that be?
Say their name. If you are wondering how you can support someone in grief, say their name. Because it reminds the person that they are not the only one who remembers their loved one. Use their name. Remember their birthday. Put it in your phone with a reminder. Don't let the fact that they've passed away be the reason that you let them fade away.
I like that. Finally, in addition to your website, which again will be in the program notes, what are some other additional ways that individuals can get in touch with you about your services or about the conference?
Yeah, so like we mentioned, there's the Eventbrite link that will be available. You can check me out on my website. I am on social medias, both Facebook and Instagram, as On Tuesdays We Wear Black. And then on LinkedIn is a really great way to find me and interact with me. I do a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. So Kate Mollison on LinkedIn, and then my podcast, which if you go to my website, you'll be able to listen to my podcast, The Happily Never After Show, which is an expose on the widowhood experience, if you will. My blog is on my website, and there's a whole cornucopia of information out there about what I do. So just Google me. Or I come up on Google now.
That's right. Yeah, I occasionally, and I know this sounds weird, but sometimes I'll Google myself just to see what comes up. But anyway, Kate, it's been so much fun having this conversation with you. I really enjoyed our time together. So thank you again for taking time out of your day to spend it with me and our audience.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And to your audience, thank you for listening to me.
That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.